3 weeks later, February 2011. She sits at her dressing table looking at her face in the mirror. Her face lacks definition around the cheeks and jaw. It's a face like a piece of technology, and her two eyes are cursors blinking. Or it's reminiscent of the moon reflected in something wobbly and oblique. It expresses everything all at once, which is the same as expressing nothing. To wear a makeup for this occasion would be, she concludes, embarrassing. Without breaking eye contact with herself, she dips her finger in an open pot of clear lip balm and applies it. Downstairs, when she takes her coat off the hook, her brother Alan comes out from the living room.
"Where are you going?"
he says. "Out."
"Where's out?"
She puts her arms through the sleeves of her coat and adjusts the collar. She's beginning to feel nervous now and hopes her silence is communicating insolence rather than uncertainty. "Just out for a walk," she says. Alan moves to stand in front of the door.
"Well, I know you're not going out to meet friends," he says, "because you don't have any friends, do you?"
"No, I don't." She smiles now, a placid smile, hoping that this gesture of submission will placate him and he'll move away from the door. Instead, he says,
"What are you doing that for?"
"What?" she says.
"This weird smile you're doing."
He mimics her face, contorted into an ugly grin, teeth bared. Though he's grinning, the force and extremity of this impersonation make him look angry.
"Are you happy that you don't have friends?"
he says. "No." Still smiling, she takes two small steps backwards and then turns and walks towards the kitchen, where there's a patio door onto the garden. Alan walks after her. He grabs her by the upper arm and tugs her back from the door. She feels her jaw tighten. His fingers compress her arm through her jacket.
"If you go crying to Mam about this," says Alan.
"No," says Marianne. "No, I'm just going out for a walk now. Thank you." He releases her and she slips out through the patio door, closing it behind her. Outside, the air feels very cold and her teeth start to chatter. She walks around the side of the house, down the driveway and out into the street. Her arm is throbbing where he grabbed it. She takes her phone from a pocket and composes a text, repeatedly hitting the wrong key, deleting and retyping. Finally, she sends it. "On my way." Before she puts the phone back, she receives a reply.
"Cool. See you soon."
At the end of last term, the school soccer team reached the final of some competition, and everyone in the year had to take the last three classes off and go and watch them. Marianne had never seen them play before. She had no interest in sport and suffered anxiety related to physical education. In the bus on the way to the match, she just listened to her headphones. No one spoke to her. Out the window, black cattle, green meadows, white houses with brown roof tiles. The football team were all together at the top of the bus, drinking water and slapping each other on the shoulders to raise morale. Marianne had the sense that her real life was happening somewhere very far away, happening without her, and she didn't know if she would ever find out where it was and become a part of it. She had that feeling in school often, but it wasn't accompanied by any specific images of what the real life might look or feel like. All she knew was that when it started, she wouldn't need to imagine it anymore. It stayed dry for the match. They had been brought there for the purpose of standing at the sidelines and cheering. Marianne was near the goalposts, with Karen and some of the other girls. Everyone other than Marianne seemed to know the school chants off by heart somehow, with lyrics she had never heard before. By half-time it was still nil all, and Miss Keeney handed around boxes of juice and energy bars. For the second half, the ends changed around, and the school forwards were playing near where Marianne was standing. Connell Waldron was the centre forward. She could see him standing there in his football kit, the shiny white shorts, the school jersey with number 9 on the back. He had very good posture, more so than any of the other players. His figure was like a long, elegant line drawn with a brush. When the ball moved towards their end of the pitch, he tended to run around and maybe throw one of his hands in the air, and then he went back to standing still. It was pleasurable to watch him, and she didn't think he knew or cared where she was standing. After school someday, she could tell him she had been watching him, and he'd laugh at her and call her weird. At 70 minutes, Aidan Kennedy brought the ball up the left side of the pitch and crossed it over to Connell, who took a shot from the corner of the penalty area over the heads of the defenders, and it spun into the back of the net. Everyone screamed, even Marianne, and Karen threw her arm around Marianne's waist and squeezed it. They were cheering together. They had seen something magical, which dissolved the ordinary social relations between them. Miss Keeney was whistling and stamping her feet. On the pitch, Connell and Aidan embraced like reunited brothers. Connell was so beautiful. It occurred to Marianne how much she wanted to see him having sex with someone. It didn't have to be her. It could be anybody. It would be beautiful just to watch him. She knew these were the kind of thoughts that made her different from other people in school, and weirder. Marianne's classmates all seemed to like school so much and find it normal. To dress in the same uniform every day, to comply at all times with arbitrary rules, to be scrutinised and monitored for misbehaviour, this is normal to them. They have no sense of the school as an oppressive environment. Marianne had a row with the history teacher, Mr. Kerrigan, last year, because he caught her looking out a window during class, and no one in the class took her side. It seemed so obviously insane to her that she should have to dress up in a costume every morning and be herded around a huge building all day, and that she wasn't even allowed to move her eyes where she wanted. Even her eye movements fell under the jurisdiction of school rules. "You're not learning if you're staring out of the window daydreaming," Mr. Kerrigan said. Marianne, who had lost her temper by then, snapped back. "Don't delude yourself. I have nothing to learn from you." Connell said recently that he remembered that incident, and that at the time he'd felt she was being harsh on Mr. Kerrigan, who was actually one of the more reasonable teachers.
"But I see what you're saying," Connell added, "about feeling a bit imprisoned in the school. I do see that. He should have let you look out the window. I would agree there. You weren't doing any harm."
After their conversation in the kitchen, when she told him she liked him, Connell started coming over to her house more often. He would arrive early to pick his mother up from work and hang around in the living room not saying much, or stand by the fireplace with his hands in his pockets. Marianne never asked why he came over. They talked a little bit, or she talked and he nodded. He told her she should try reading the Communist Manifesto. He thought she would like it, and he offered to write down the title for her so she wouldn't forget. "I know what the Communist Manifesto is called," she said. He shrugged, "Okay." After a moment, he added, smiling,
"You're trying to act superior, but like, you haven't even read it."
She had to laugh then, and he laughed because she did. They couldn't look at each other when they were laughing. They had to look into the corners of the room, or at their feet. Connell seemed to understand how she felt about school. He said he liked hearing her opinions. "You hear enough of them in class," she said. Matter-of-factly, he replied,
"You act different in class. You're not really like that."
He seemed to think Marianne had access to a range of different identities between which she slipped effortlessly. This surprised her, because she usually felt confined inside one single personality, which was always the same, regardless of what she did or said. She had tried to be different in the past as a kind of experiment, but it had never worked. If she was different with Connell, the difference was not happening inside herself, in her personhood, but in between them, in the dynamic. Sometimes she made him laugh, but other days he was taciturn, inscrutable. And after he left, she would feel high, nervous, at once energetic and terribly drained. He followed her into the study last week while she was looking for a copy of The Fire Next Time to lend him. He stood there inspecting the bookshelves with his top shirt button undone and school tie loosened. She found the book and handed it to him, and he sat down on the window seat looking at the back cover. She sat beside him and asked if his friends Eric and Rob knew that he read so much outside school.
"They wouldn't be interested in that stuff," he said.
"You mean they're not interested in the world around them?" Connell made the face he always made when she criticised his friends, an inexpressive frown.
"Not in the same way," he said. "They have their own interests. I don't think they'd be reading books about racism and all that."
"Right, they're too busy bragging about who they're having sex with," she said. He paused for a second, like his ears had pricked up at this remark. But he didn't know exactly how to respond.
Yeah, they do a bit of that, he said. I'm not defending it, I know they can be annoying.
Doesn't it bother you? He paused again.
Most of it wouldn't, he said. They do some stuff that goes a bit over the line and that would annoy me, obviously. But at the end of the day, they're my friends, you know. It's different for you.
She looked at him, but he was examining the spine of the book. Why is it different? She said. He shrugged, bending the book cover back and forth. She felt frustrated. Her face and hands were hot. He kept on looking at the book, although he'd certainly read all the text on the back by then. She was attuned to the presence of his body in a microscopic way, as if the ordinary motion of his breathing was powerful enough to make her ill.
You know you were saying the other day that you like me, he said. In the kitchen you said it when we were talking about school.
Yeah?
Did you mean like as a friend or what?
She stared down into her lap. She was wearing a corduroy skirt, and in the light from the window she could see it was flecked with pieces of lint. No, not just as a friend, she said.
Oh, okay. I was wondering.
He sat there, nodding to himself.
I'm kind of confused about what I feel,
he added.
I think it would be awkward in school if anything happened with us.
No one would have to know. He looked up at her, directly, with total attention. She knew he was going to kiss her, and he did. His lips were soft. His tongue moved into her mouth slightly. Then it was over and he was drawing away. He seemed to remember he was holding the book and began to look at it again. That was nice, she said. He nodded, swallowed, glanced down at the book once more. His attitude was so sheepish, as if it had been rude of her even to make reference to the kiss, that Marianne started to laugh. He looked flustered then.
All right, he said. What are you laughing for?
Nothing.
You're acting like you've never kissed anyone before.
Well, I haven't, she said. He put his hand over his face. She laughed again, she couldn't stop herself, and then he was laughing too. His ears were very red, and he was shaking his head. After a few seconds, he stood up, holding the book in his hand.
Don't go telling people in school about this, okay?
He said. Like I would talk to anyone in school. He left the room. Weakly, she crumpled off the seat, down onto the floor, with her legs stretched out in front of her like a rag doll. While she sat there, she felt as if Connell had been visiting her house only to test her, and she had passed the test, and the kiss was a communication that said, "You passed." She thought of the way he'd laughed when she said she'd never kissed anyone before. For another person to laugh that way might have been cruel, but it wasn't like that with him. They'd been laughing together at a shared situation they'd found themselves in, though how to describe the situation or what was funny about it, Marianne didn't know exactly. The next morning, before German class, she sat watching her classmates shove each other off the storage heaters, shrieking and giggling. When the lesson began, they listened quietly to an audio tape of a German woman speaking about a party she had missed. Es tut mir sehr leid. In the afternoon, it started snowing, thick grey flakes that fluttered past the windows and melted on the gravel. Everything looked and felt sensuous, the stale smell of classrooms, the tinny intercom bell that sounded between lessons, the dark, austere trees that stood like apparitions around the basketball court, the slow routine work of copying out notes in different coloured pens on fresh blue and white lined paper. Connell, as usual, did not speak to Marianne in school or even look at her. She watched him across classrooms as he conjugated verbs, chewing on the end of his pen. On the other side of the cafeteria at lunchtime, smiling about something with his friends. Their secret weighed inside her body pleasurably, pressing down on her pelvic bone when she moved. She didn't see him after school that day or the next. On Thursday afternoon, his mother was working again, and he arrived early to pick her up. Marianne had to answer the door because no one else was home. He had changed out of his school uniform. He was wearing black jeans and a sweatshirt. When she saw him, she had an instinct to run away and hide her face. "Lorraine's in the kitchen," she said. Then she turned and went upstairs to her room and closed the door. She lay face down on the bed, breathing into the pillow. Who was this person, Connell, anyway? She felt she knew him very intimately, but what reason did she have to feel that? Just because he had kissed her once, with no explanation, and then warned her not to tell anyone? After a minute or two, she heard a knock on her bedroom door and she sat up. "Come in," she said. He opened the door and, giving her an inquiring look, as if to see whether he was welcome, entered the room and closed the door behind him.
"Are you pissed off with me?"
he said. "No, why would I be?" He shrugged. Idly, he wandered over to the bed and sat down. She was sitting cross-legged, holding her ankles. They sat there in silence for a few moments. Then he got onto the bed with her. He touched her leg and she lay back against the pillow. Boldly, she asked if he was going to kiss her again. He said,
"What do you think?"
This struck her as a highly cryptic and sophisticated thing to say. Anyway, he did start to kiss her. She told him that it was nice and he just said nothing. She felt she would do anything to make him like her, to make him say out loud that he liked her. He put his hand under her school blouse. In his ear, she said, "Can we take our clothes off?" He had his hand inside her bra.
"Definitely not," he said. "This is stupid anyway. Lorraine is right downstairs."
He called his mother by her first name like that. Marianne said, "She never comes up here." He shook his head and said,
"No, we should stop."
He sat up and looked down at her. "You were tempted for a second there," she said.
"Not really."
"I tempted you." He was shaking his head, smiling.
"You're such a strange person," he said.
Now she's standing in his driveway, where his car is parked. He texted her the address. It's number 33. A terraced house with pebble dash walls, net curtains, a tiny concrete yard. She can see a light switched on in the upstairs window. It's hard to believe he really lives in there, a house she has never been inside or even seen before. She's wearing a black sweater, grey skirt, cheap black underwear. Her legs are shaved meticulously, her underarms are smooth and chalky with deodorant, and her nose is running a little. She rings the doorbell and hears his footsteps coming down the stairs. He opens the door. Before he lets her in, he looks over her shoulder to make sure that no one has seen her arrive.